Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2014. Lecture 7, delivered on February 6, 2014. The title of this lecture is Ratio Analysis.
Today, Ratio Analysis. This is a continuation of the lecture at the last class, and we will be using the financial statements of Limited Brands, Inc., which some of you know about. It's a retail outlet. I choose this company because it's got fairly normal financials. There are a few things in there that are a little dodgy that I'll have to sort of tap dance around. But it actually is a company that is strong, growing, retail, and it has many of the aspects that we care about talking about in this subtopic. So, and you have in front of you the Limited Brands financial statements. And also, I gave you a template financial analysis worksheet. This is actually, the one you have here is a small version of one that I have had for literally almost like decades. Well, no, I have had it for decades. It's pared down. Understand that there are all kinds of financial ratios. Some of them so arcane I couldn't remember them or remember even why we use them. But this is sort of like the short and simple quickie worksheet that you would put together for a quick overview of the ratios that matter when you're doing this kind of analysis. And I'll have a template for this up on ReggieNet tonight for you to use when you do ratio analysis, which you will have to do for a quiz that's coming up. And you'll also do some ratio analysis for your first exam. So without further ado, though, now you notice that one of the things that is on here is just writing down the revenues and then calculating the percent changes year over year in those. And all along, these two columns right here, the middle two columns, second and fourth columns are the percent deltas. And that way you can have a handy way to write down numbers or calculate with ratios and then see what the percent changes in those ratios are. You know what? There. Oh, okay. So this is sort of like a way that you can consolidate and organize your thinking on this. You don't have to use it, but it actually, I had one of these for decades. I built this originally in a spreadsheet called, it's before your time. If you say you remember it, I will be surprised, called Lotus 123, a spreadsheet back from the old days, real powerful one that was conveniently ripped off by Microsoft for Excel. As Bill Gates did many things. And Bill, if you're listening, you can go bite me. Anyway, where the hell was I? Okay. Moving along here with this. And we already did some of this work already, obviously. We did the revenues of Limited Brands, and we did the percent changes in those revenues. So I would, if you're interested in how to do this, the revenues. Is there some reason why I keep losing things? Okay, revenues for the 3 years were 96.13, and you can just write these down. And then 10.364, and then 10.459. And then you can do the percent changes in those revenues year over year. And I wish I could remember what they are. I'm going to do them real quick here for you, just for the sake of completeness in this little exercise. So remember the percent changes, end minus begin over begin, and then you times it by 100. So we would have 10364 minus 9613 equals divided by 9613 equals, and then times 100. And you round to two decimal places appropriately. So you get 7.81% change in revenue from 2011 to 2012. And then for the next year, if I remember right, it was like 0.92%, but I'll do it again, 10459 minus 10364 equals divided by 10364 times 100, and we get less than a percent. We get 0.92%. So we got, it's just a way of organizing along your way here. And we can do the same thing for ratio. See the percent change in a ratio year over year. And that's when it gets kind of interesting. Because a lot of people think in terms of absolute numbers. And absolute numbers are sort of like for the common person. In business and in science, for that matter, most science, what we really care about are percentage changes. So in, I'll give you an example, in finance. So interest rates went up from 3% to 4%. Okay, that's a 1% rise, right? Bullshit. No. That is a 33% rise in interest rates. You're saying, wait, what? Yeah. You see why that's a 3% to 4% increase in interest rates? That's a 1% change over a 3% base. So that's actually a jump of one-third, 33.3% in interest rates. You follow? So sometimes, many times, when you look at the percent change, that's what tells you what you need to know. And sometimes it's quite a bit more dramatic than just saying, well, it went up by 2 or 3 or something like that. Okay, net income. I'm going to go here and beat out net income for you. The net income was 805, 850, 735. 805. Now tell me if I'm wrong here. 850. And 753. Is that right? Okay, now, percent change 2011 to 2012. Excuse me. Okay, that would be 850 less 805. And that's that difference divided by 805. And then times it by 100. My butt. 45 divided by 805 equals, times 100, 5.59% increase in revenue. But then, 2012 to 2013, 753 minus 850 equals, that's negative 97, divided by the base, 850, base year. Oh, that is a negative 11.41%. Net income eased back. Net income backed off rather severely. And you might say to yourself, okay, why? Remember, they looked healthy as we were driving down past gross margin to gross profit to operating profit, EBIT. And then all of a sudden, they get smacked at the net income line. In other words, at the shareholder line, they suddenly get potty trained. What happened? And is that really bad news or not? What happened? Why? What happened that knocked net income on its fat ass? Yeah. Let's look. Look at the growth. You have a little bit of negative growth in operating income, but then they come roaring back at the operating income line in 2013. So all of the expenses that you would look at normally, wages and salaries, that kind of stuff, it's not showing there. But then at the net income line, bam, they're knocked down in 2013. So it had to be something that happened between operating income and net income. If we go up here and look, well, yeah, they started borrowing more money. There's clearly that you can see this. You see that? They're taking on debt. They're leveraging. Okay, that could explain. But that's almost $100 million that they lost here. And that's not enough, that the interest expense increase isn't enough to explain it. So I look down at this other income. Well, I can't know what other income is, or can I? Is there any way that I could find out what other income is? Or is that just going to be a black box forever? What? I love it when you talk like that. Dinner tonight, Denny's. That's where the notes to the financial statement would come in. And then they would have to disclose what happened. What was this other income? Were they taking money from aliens and suddenly the aliens cut them off? Or what was going on? But what is clear from these financial statements is that for at least a couple of years and possibly longer, this company was living off something called other income, which would be income that is not related to their core business model. And suddenly, that other income stopped happening. Was that investments? Was that some kind of investments in securities? Or was that investment in other companies? Or what was it? But whatever it was, it has now gone down substantially. It might have been the result of their outside investments and the income that they get from that. And because the stock market was in a tailspin, those suddenly just stopped paying as much. But on that basis, I would probably not be as wildly concerned about this happening, this drop in net income, simply because it didn't represent a core operating failure. It represented something that they had been relying on to boost net income that's no longer there to boost net income. So it's almost like 2013 is like one of the first year in a few years where I can see what the company itself does absent all of its other things that it might want to play with, like stock market investing or whatever. You just kind of have to think back and forth. But what it actually is, you would have to go to the notes to the financial statement. But my reasoning here is that whatever it is, if it was truly something that had to do with the company itself, it would have been up higher on the financial statement, on the income statement. Down here, this is candy and turds. Candy comes in, turds go out. And you really can't say, well, this is the core company failing. It's not. I'm still worried about it. And I'd actually probably be more willing to ask questions about, what were you doing making all this money out here? Well, gee, do you notice what happened when that money out there suddenly turned south on you? Your net income drops. So maybe you ought to be a little more cautious about having that kind of stuff boost your income. For a couple of weeks, first start of the semester, you've been on crack, cocaine. And now, I mean, eventually it ran out, and so you went to some meth, and then that guy killed himself on TV, or whatever it was, and so now you have to rely on you. So now I see you, not that hotshot boy bouncing off the walls, mowing the lawn on top of the building. real examples for real people, or something like that. Get off it. Okay, now let's go to some ratios. Gross margin. Gross margin is simply you take your gross income divided by your sales. Gross income divided by sales. Now remember, the gross income is just after cost of goods sold. And one caution again, whenever you're looking at financial statements, sometimes a word that I use won't be the word you see. So on real financial statements, I might see instead of sales, what would be the word that I would look for?
Revenue.
And make sure you're looking at net revenue, which, like I said, is almost always what's reported now. But the gross margin, again, is just your gross income divided by your sales. So in this case, for 2011, and again, I encourage you strongly to follow along with me, gross profit was, in 2011, was $36.31 divided by sales of $9,613 equals. And we get gross margin here is 37.78%. Gross margin is a percentage. Not all ratios are percentages, and I will actually test you on what the units of measure are. But this one, you would times by 100 to get a percentage. What this says is that in 2011, their sales resulted in a 37.78% keep over wholesale. In other words, out of every retail dollar, they kept a little under 38 cents after paying the wholesale price. Now, the next question would be, is that good or bad? The answer is, you can't say. In some industries, that would be a terrible margin. You would see a gross margin in some companies of 80%. In other companies, you'll see gross margins of 10%. The real question is, one, what's the industry like? And two, regardless of what the industry's like, what does this look like for the company? Okay? Now, taking you into the thinking part again, and this is not about numbers. We're not accountants. I want you to think here. Madam, suppose that you were going to argue that you saw that the industry gross margin was around, 25%. And you wanted to take a negative view on this company at 38%. So here I am. Hey, we kept 38 cents out of every dollar after wholesale. The industry kept only 25%. Take a negative view and come at me. Why might you not like me saying that? You got nothing, have you? Anyone? I'm charging too much. Yes. Well, okay. You get all this extra candy, but in other words, your prices are so high compared to industry standards that you get to keep 38 cents out of every dollar. The typical company is keeping 25 cents. That tells me possibly one explanation would be you're charging high prices. You bring your prices down, you will have more quantity demanded by the law of demand. We don't know whether that bringing the price down will actually increase your revenue or decrease it based upon the elasticity of price elasticity of demand. But I'm a little concerned here that you might have too high a margin. You might be able to build a lot more revenue by bringing your prices down Or, you know, we might just say, oh, you're cool. This is fine. Go ahead. You knock yourself out with it. But remember, no number is absolute good or absolute bad. You can be you can praise any company, or you can be a bitch with any company. And it actually doesn't hurt for you to see it both ways and then use judgment for the overall picture. Now let's go to the gross margin for the next year here, 2012. That would be 4057 divided by 10364, which is a 39.15%. So we can see that there has been a firming. We say the gross margin firmed. It firmed up. Okay? Now let's pull it to the last year here and look at 4386. 4386 less 10459 equals divided by 4386 divided by 10459. Oops. 4386 divided by 10459. And we get survey says, geez, 41.94? Is that what you got? So their margin firmed even more. So now let's look back and see what the percent changes in the margin were. So this is where we do a percent change of the ratios. So the change in gross margin from 2011 to 2012 would be 39.15 minus 37.78, that divided by 37.78. So their margin firmed 3.63% from 11 to 12. And then from 12 to 13, we would have 41.94 less 39.15. That divided by 39.15, is that right? 7.13%? So now with the percentages, you can see that the gross margin firming is accelerating over this 3-year period. Again, now that we've got the percentages, we can see that you couldn't really see that with just the raw numbers. You could see it was increasing. But by doing the percentages, you can see that it is getting firmer. It's not just that it's staying at about the same level. It's actually strengthening. It's accelerating the firming of the margin. That would point me... And again, this is a matter of judgment, and I have to look at other things. I shouldn't be talking out my ass, but what I would guess is that they are holding their price line, but they are driving down their wholesale costs aggressively against holding their price line. That's what I would guess it looks like. They were taking advantage of the recession and the fact that their wholesalers were hurting to gain price concessions from their wholesalers. Do you see why I'm saying that? Because their margin is just getting better and better at the gross line, it looks to me as if they're just bullying these companies that want to, Limited, you're not going to leave us. We'll die without you. This is a recession. Limited says, yeah, we'll stay with you, but we're going to want some price concessions. Otherwise, you can kiss my ass and go to hell. That's diplomatic language. I can't tell you that's what happened, but it sure smells like it to me, is that the Limited is playing hardball in a recession. So you keep that in mind. Recessions, remember the old saying, what is normal to the spider is chaos to the fly. And in this kind of in a recession, normal is for the predators to make chaos for their underlings. Same is true on a battlefield too. We create confusion because that's normal to us. We train for it. But it is chaos to the enemy, who is not used to this total chaos of sound, light, and all those funny smells like burning flesh. Enough of that. Operating margin. Let's get the operating margins down. That would be EBIT. Remember, EBIT is operating margin. Operating profit is operating income. So you'll hear different terms for it. So we'll get down here to operating income. That divided by sales is operating margin. So we've got 1284 divided by 9613 for 2011. And that is 13.36%. And this, of course, it's a margin. Margin means it will be a percentage. So remember to multiply by 100 to get a percentage. What this tells me is that after I pay for the goods, the wholesale, after I pay my employees, for every dollar that I earn, I keep a little more than 13 cents of it after all of my normal business expenses. I'm keeping a little more than 13 cents of it. Now, is that good or bad? Again, you have to look at industry standard. You also have to look at this company's position in the industry and some other factors too. And then we'll go on and do the operating margins. Okay, we got operating margin on 2012 is 1238. And for God's sake, do these with me in case I make a mistake. Divided by 10,364. 64 equals, that's 11.95%. Ooh. Lost a little bit of ground. But now, let's go to 2013, see how it looks there. 1573 divided by 10,459 equals 15.04%. Ooh, came roaring back. So they had a pretty serious dip. Let's do the percentage changes in this. You'll see the first one from 2011 to 2012 will be negative. 11.95 minus 13.36. All of that divided by 13.36 equals. So that they, in finance, we would the technical term for that is they took an ass bath. Their operating margin whacked down about 10.5%. As a famous cartoon show would have said, that's a paddling. Yeah. Now we go to the next year and things look pretty darn nice because we'll go 15.04 less 11.95 equals divided by 11.95. So that's 25.86%. So they jumped really well. okay? Now, so we've got the internal discussions, and I'm the president of the company, and you are the person who was responsible for making sure that operating margin looked good all the time. So it went down, and then it went back up. So I come into you, and I stare at you. What do you have to say for yourself about our operating margin? It fell in 2012.
Yeah. I have no idea.
Well, defend yourself, for God's sake. I mean, you know, I used to be a veterinarian. I fixed dogs. Never mind.
Okay.
Defend yourself. You have failed me for the last time. It fell by 11% almost in 2012. And now here we are. Well, wouldn't you say, well, kind evil master, I brought it up by 25% in the latest year, so everything's okay, right? Wouldn't that sound like a reasonable argument? And, of course, I would then make you die of strangulation with my mind, simply because, yeah, when you have fallen down into the gutter and you come back up to street level, it's going to look pretty nice. So I am not actually all that impressed with that 25.86% increase in operating margin that I see there, because that just means that you came back from a disaster and now you're standing up on the street again. Let's find out how not to let that ever happen again. Okay, Ace? I don't like that up and down. That's volatility. Volatility makes my back leg go up and down. It scares me. Okay, enough of that. Now, net margin, last of the margins. These are what are called the profitability ratios, the profitability ratios. Net margin is just your net income divided by your sales. In other words, this is the one, how much of every dollar of sales goes, it belongs to the shareholders. How much of every dollar of sales belongs to the shareholders? In by dividend or capital gain or whatever, plowback, whatever you want to do with it. Okay, so we go for net margin. We would go net income 805 divided by 9613. 805 divided by 9613 times 100 would give us 8.37%. And again, margins are percentages. So here's the deal. What that says is that for every $1 of sales in this company, the shareholders get to have, either through dividends or plowback or a combination of those, about 8 1/3 cents of it. Is that good or is that bad? Again, this one is wild. You can see net margins of 25, 30, 50% in some industries. In other industries, you'll see net margins that are just absolutely, they hit the suckle meter at the top. You'll see under a percent for some companies that are healthy, long-term stable operations. Especially you will see that, for example, in the oil industry, a net margin that is 1% wouldn't surprise me. A penny out of every dollar, an oil company has a penny out of every dollar of sales is what the shareholders get. And that, I mean, that just excites me. That's a wonderful thing. Why would a penny out of every dollar, madam, why would a penny out of every dollar for an oil company make me happy as a shareholder? Can you tell me? Oh, yeah, exactly. When you've got $100, $200, $500 billion, yeah, I'll take a penny of each of those, and I'll have a pretty nice meal, maybe a steak and shake. So you see, you have to look at the scale of the operation. This is one of the things that I like to tell about some of the companies that we love the most as far as investments go are very lowly companies. They are not Hail Mary, incredibly high-priced, expensive product companies. Great example would be something like a Dollar Tree store. You think about everything in there costs a dollar. So their revenue on any given day, if they have 75 customers, they'll pull in $75. Paying their workers minimum wage, paying the light bill, paying the rent on the building, and paying any other expenses like price tags and signs and all that, that company probably has maybe in expenses $70, $72. And so at $75 of revenue, one of those little buildings has only $3 of profit for a given day. And yet we love those kinds of companies because for this reason. Okay, that's $3 of profit for that one store for one day. Take that $3 times 360 days a year, approximately, that they'll be open. So you're around a grand. Well, whoop-dee-doo. Well, okay, multiply that by, excuse me, 5,000 stores. And then suddenly you're beginning to see that the scale of these operations is what drives them on low margins. Aldi's is a great example of that. Walmart is an example of that. These companies, that candy companies, that some of the greatest rich people in America made their fortunes with little tiny candies and little tiny toys that cost a penny to make and you sell them for 2 pennies. But when you do that for millions and millions and millions of people for decades, you make a fortune. The Hail Mary isn't necessary. Sometimes it's 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and you're going to get to the goal line, which is wealth. Okay, let's go to the next year here. And everything I'm saying here, I'm not just talking just to talk. I'm showing you how we think in business and think in finance. It's much deeper than you would do so in other quantitative subjects like accounting. Okay, where the hell? Net income, okay. We've got for the next year, 850 divided by 10, 364. You got 850 divided by 10, 364. So we eased back a little bit there to 8.20%. Modest, but it's a little bit. I would not get all kinds of excited, but I would say, all right, let's see what happens the next year here. So we go to the next year, and our net income of 753 on sales of 10,459 gets us, excuse me. Now that's a paddling.
%7.20%.
Now I'm a little bit, I'm hurt. I'm not angry. I'm hurt. I trusted you to keep the net margin firm. And this is how you treated my trust. I don't think I can ever trust you again. So let's go 8.20 minus 8.37 equals divided by 8.37. Net margin eased back. Net margin eased back, 2.03%, 2012 over 2011. And then 7.2% minus 8.2% divided by 8.2%. That's where we begin to need, that's where we need to talk. Negative 12.2% net margin didn't ease back. That is serious. Now, if you were to look at just the numbers, 8.2 down to 7.2, you wouldn't see the full impact. This is a whopping 12.2% loss in what is available to the shareholders. Now, if I'm a shareholder, that's the kind of thing that makes me begin to get fussy at an annual shareholders meeting. If I am a fund manager that invests in this stock, I say to myself, here's the problem. You see, because you didn't earn as much for us, the shareholders, at the end of the day here in 2012 versus 2011, and then it got nasty. You saw it happening. You couldn't figure out how to stop it from happening. So here we are. In 2013, you have don't have as much. So what are we going to do? You're not going to send me a dividend? That'll save the day, and you'll just use all of it to go back into the company? Or are you going to still keep my dividend, and then you just won't reinvest as much in the company? Either way you cut it, it's not a good thing for me as a shareholder. So that's when I begin to get fussy about how the management is acting here. Okay, now the ROA, return on assets, is the... I'll let you get caught up here. I see some people writing. Let me motivate this a little bit here. Let me motivate this. Do you have toys? What kind?
Xbox.
Yeah, that's a toy. Okay. Do you have a toy? Or a couple of toys? I know it's not a girl. You're lonely. I see your needy firearms. Posts. Firearms? Mm-hmm. Anything decent?
I have an AR-15.
Nah. You in the military?
Yeah. Not yet.
You go in the military and then come out and talk to me about it. Woman, do you have any toys?
No.
You don't have any toys? You most certainly do that. Necklace is a toy.
Yeah.
And the earrings, they're very tasteful. Love that that pink shell pattern. That's gorgeous. But it's a toy.
Okay.
It's not earning you any money. Is it?
No.
At the end of the day, do you put it down and you find some money that's coming out of it?
I wish.
It's a toy. You see, in a business, we can't have toys. In our personal lives, we can. Every asset in a business is subject to scrutiny for what it makes for us as a company. In our personal lives, we don't do that. Well, what's this going to do for my money in my pocket? I mean, that would be a really sad... I met people like that. But in business, that's one of the most fundamental differences, and that's why it's kind of like a culture shock when you get into a business and they... see everything that is there, every paperclip, every truck, every book, a block of printing paper, every computer, as having it as its duty creating revenue or supporting the creation of revenue. So this term return on assets is asking the question, how much money did we make off our assets in this company? Because that's the only thing that makes us money is our assets. There's no other source of money unless you're getting money under the table just because you're charming. But in a company, when you decide that you're going to take an extra smoke break, you are wasting yourself as my asset. On the job, you belong to me. You are my bitch, okay? I really hate that because on Facebook, people ask me, why is he your bitch? And it's embarrassing. How do I explain the personality thing? You know, it's there, but... But quite honestly, that's why they get off, why in management. And as a manager, I did this too. I ride your ass. You know, why are you over there fooling around? You are working. You're an asset. Why is that computer sitting there? If that computer's not going to do anything for us, I want you to sell it. If you can't sell it, get it out of here because it's taking up space. That's that efficiency thing. So when I do return on assets, I'm taking net income divided by your total assets. Net income divided by total assets. So I want to see how much all of my assets are making my shareholders. So what we're going to do here is we're going to take net income, which is 805. Now flip over to look for total assets. Now notice, warning here. Anything that will involve a balance sheet entry, you can't do 2011. This is typical these days, is that the reports that you get from companies, they'll give you 3 years of net income of your income statement, but they give you only 2 years of your balance sheet. If you want more than that, which we probably would if we wanted to do some hardcore trend analysis and all that, we would have to go to the SEC disclosure documents. But for us, I mean, that's way too much like work right now. So what we're going to do is just do 2012 and 2013, because those are the only ones we have the total assets for. So the net income for 2012 was $850. So $850 divided by, flip it over, find total assets for 2012. You know how that sounds while I'm processing these on the recorder? How are you supposed to, you know, I actually have cut out parts because it sounded like I was being overwritten by some thing channeling. Anyway, total assets, 6108. Be careful of where your columns are. I have so many times looked at the wrong column for these, and it just drives me crazy. 6108 equals. So for 2012, I've got a 13.92% ROA. In other words, those assets are my investment in the company. They returned me almost 14% as an investment. For 2012, they returned me almost 14% as an investment. Now, the question would be, is that a good return on assets or is that a bad? As an investment, would an investment that returns 14% be good? But that's a bad question to ask. Let me say it again. Would an investment that return 14% be good? Why is that a terrible question to ask? Yeah?
Depends on the industry.
Almost.
The scale? How the economy's doing?
How about the risk? Remember that I can show you how you can make 100% return expected. But it can also require that you do some things that are really dodgy and might end up with you having your body taken off the pavement with a spatula. You see, whatever return you are talking about, you have to measure it against the risk of that investment. So when I say, well, is 14% return on assets good? I would ask myself, based upon the risk of that investment, is that good? In other words, if I were to find other things just as risky to invest in, would they return me more than 14% or less than 14%? That's the question you have to ask. 14% sounds like, actually, in 2012, that was a hell of an investment. That was a great return. But at the same time, well, how much risk did I take for that investment? Throwing those assets, the limited did, at its operations, it earned 14% on those assets for its shareholders. Was that a good, I'd have to say, how risky was that? And if I had invested in something just as risky, would I have made that much or would I have made more or made less? So I can't really answer the question too well here. So let's do ROA for the next one. ROA for 2013 would have been 753 divided by 6019 equals 12.51%. So we had a drop, 12.5 minus 13.92 divided by 13.92 equals a 5.1 minus 13.92 divided by 13.92 equals, we drop back 10.13% on return on assets. Our return on assets fell. Now, that's on its face, that's bad. But then remember, now we're in the world of talking about investments. And what were investments of this risk level in general doing in that same time period? So I can have a real, I can make a scene with the, at the shareholder meeting and all that. But at the same time, I also have to appreciate that this was when there, a lot of investments were taking a southern tour. So I have to say, okay, there's a lot of factors involved here. I'm not cutting them slack by saying it. But at the same time, even if the risk were staying the same, investments of that risk level were probably, in general, easing back. Was this one easing back more, less? That would be the question you would have to ask. You would have to be more nuanced about it. ROE. This is the return on the shareholders' money. Remember, the assets of the corporation belong to some extent to the shareholders, but the liability holders have their claim first. This looks at just what is the shareholders' money and how that was worked, how much that worked for their benefit at the net income line. So you take net income divided by total stockholders' equity. Net income divided by total stockholders' equity. And if we do that one, net income for 2012 would be 805 divided by total stockholders' equity. Total, do you see it down there? Holy cow. Well, I didn't notice that. What do you see? Do you see something rather troubling? You see it? Look at the stockholders' equity line. It's total equity. Mother of God. You see it, right? They barely had any stockholder book value for the shareholders in 2012. By 2013, essentially, the shareholders were dressed in a barrel singing the blues. It was negative shareholders' equity. You'd think that they were a giant bank or something. At least then the Fed would bail them out secretly. But quite honestly, in this situation, it's not even worth doing these calculations. And honestly, that kind of blindsided me. I mean, I didn't realize the Limited had actually done that. Really, when you get into a negative number down there like that, like negative stockholders' equity, the ratio has really no meaning to it at all. So, let me point out, if you're not seeing it, let me just point it out here. You see the total equity line? They barely had any in 2012. By 2013, they had basically gone into the parallel negative universe of ours. So that can kiss my ass. Let's do something here. Current quick and burn. The first two are in the book. The third one is one from my old school days that we care about. The quick ratio is just your current assets over your current liabilities. In other words, how many times over can your liquid assets cover the debts that are due within a year? So it's current assets over current liabilities is your quick ratio. It's also called, your current ratio. Okay, so in this case, we could do only 2 years. Current assets, 2368 divided by your current liabilities. Where the hell those are? 1526 equals 3.40. Now this one is a times, is the unit of measure. This is saying how many times over. In this case, this company, if it had to pay all of its bills that are due within a year right away, it could do it 3.40 times over. For 2013, that ratio would be 2205 divided by 1538. Whoa! Do you get 1.43% times? Ouch! That's a paddling. That's right. Okay. Now the next one is the quick ratio. Yeah.
For 2012, I'm getting 1.55.
Thank God. Okay, I'm going to take your word for it. Thank you. Okay, now the quick ratio. Look, if you had to liquidate and get money today, your inventory isn't going to get you jack. I mean, you know, there are companies that will buy your inventory up from you, but it's really not going to be worth. Look, on my own business's books, my inventory is I'll just give you a number. It's not this, but it's about $20,000. But if I needed to buy a burger tonight, I'm not going to get $20,000 for my burger, or I'd get a damn nice burger. You know, if you really had to get money right away, your inventory is not going to get you jack. So the quick ratio says take the current assets, but take out the inventory before you divide by current liabilities. So in that case, for 2012, what I would do is I would take my current assets, 2368, but then I would take away my inventories of 99,997, and then I would divide by the current liabilities. And that would give, which are 1526. I would take my total current assets, 2368, but then I would deduct my inventories just because they're really not going to get me any money. And then once I got that number, my current assets net of inventories, I would divide that by current liabilities. And in that case, I come up with 0.90 times. So in other words, if you don't count the inventories, this company couldn't cover its current liabilities with its current assets. Let's talk 2013. My total current assets are 2205. If I take out the inventories, which were $1,004, and then divide by my current liabilities, 1538, I get 0.78. This is actually disturbing. Now, this last one, like I said, it's just pure old school. It was one that we used to use. They don't teach it in the books anymore, but it's still useful. If you actually, in real life, had to pay all of your current bills right now, nothing would matter but the cash in your pocket. Quite honestly, Your inventory, your accounts receivable, your prepaid expenses, all of those things wouldn't matter, Jack. So the burn ratio says just take your cash and divide it by your current liabilities and see what happens. So I take cash and cash equivalents, 935 divided by 1526. 935 divided by 1526. And I find that there, my burn ratio was for 2012, 0.61 times. And then my burn ratio for 2013 would be 773 divided by 1538. Holy, 0.50. So you can see that by 2013, if they had to liquidate right now, they'd have only half of the money for every bill with their current assets that they could liquidate. We'll finish this on Tuesday. That's all I have for you. Thank you.